This morning on WCHL, free land for the school district and a Chapel Hill development site may not be so free.
I don't want to be a political pawn, and I don't want to get into it.
Sirens and text messages will test UNC's emergency alert system today, but is that the quickest way timely messages are spread on the Carolina campus?
We're not a professional alert system. We just have the benefit of social media.
And yesterday marked 1 year since Ellie Kinnaird's resignation from the state Senate. She says she has no regrets. These stories and much more, plus your Chapel Hill cover of traffic and weather together. And WCHL Championship Sports, 10 days remain until kickoff for Carolina football. And head coach Larry Fedora can sense time is running out. And
there's a 9,000-pound nonprofit gorilla in every NCAA meeting room.
That's this morning in Art Chansky's Sports Notebook.
This is 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. WCHL's morning news with Ron Stutz begins now.
8:06, it is 73 degrees in Chapel Hill and the beginning of a warm day, not as warm as it will be tomorrow. Tomorrow will be in the low 90s, today's high about 88 degrees. Chapel Hill Carrboro City School Board members say the offer of free land to build a school at Obie Creek, a little south of town, may cost more than meets the eye. At a school board meeting last week, Ben Perry of East-West Partners offered the district either 15 or 25 acres on the 120-acre Obie Creek site to build a new school across from Southern Village.
We have really no dog in this fight. I mean, we will support whatever y'all want to do with the council. We're not going to put up a fight. This is land that's going to generate no revenue for us either way.
But to put that property to use, the district would need to build a bridge, estimated to cost about $1 million. Steep slopes and environmentally sensitive areas also make developing the site difficult. East-West Partners is in the process of negotiating with the Chapel Hill Town Council on a development agreement that would govern the build-out of the Obie Creek project. The 1.5 million square foot proposal has drawn fire from neighbors concerned about the size of the development and the traffic it might generate. School Board Chair James Etta Bedford told Perry she wants to wait until the negotiations with the town have advanced before further evaluating the offer.
I don't want to be a political pawn, and I don't want to get into it, and I don't want to upset my colleagues on the town council. I don't want to upset my neighbors. I don't want to upset the county commissioners.
The board was much more eager to consider an offer of property across the street from Chapel Hill High School. The 9.3-acre site abuts land already owned by the district and would more than double the total acreage at the site. Executive Director of School Facilities Bill Mullen said this location offers more flexibility for planning new schools.
It has a frontage on Homestead Road, which makes it very, very attractive. If we were considering an elementary school, high school addition, another district building, who knows?
The price of the parcel has not been disclosed pending negotiation with the landowner in closed session. Alert Carolina isn't wasting any time testing its emergency messaging system at the start of the school year. They'll do that today. But is it the fastest way information is shared on the UNC campus? Alert Carolina will test its text message system and its sirens between 12 noon and 1 p.m. today, just the second day of classes for Carolina students. But one way members of the Carolina campus sometimes get timely warning messages faster is through social media, specifically the Overheard at UNC group on Facebook.
We're not a professional alert system. We just have the benefit of social media with 15,000 plus subscribers, so any one person can really post an alert, and then the power of social media can verify whether that's a valid or invalid claim.
That is Ian Helfrich, one of the five administrators of the Facebook group and a recent UNC graduate. He says Overheard and Alert Carolina work best when information is shared hand in hand. And when that happens, Helfrich says the campus is very accepting of Alert Carolina.
That just provides a sense of security, you know, like the university is really looking out for its students, provides a professional alert system.
However, if messages on Overheard beat Alert Carolina, some frustrations have been made very clear on that campus group.
One of the people who was involved in the incident actually posted first, and that was just a couple minutes before Alert Carolina got out, and it is faster. The trade-off is it's not always the most accurate information, whereas Alert Carolina, when they post something when they send it out to the student body. It is the official university word on what's going on.
According to Helfrich, the limited staff of Alert Carolina, compared to the nearly unlimited eyes, ears, and voices of the Carolina community, play the leading role in the time difference. In that specific incident, a man reportedly pulled a knife on a student in the student union and then fled to Franklin Street. You can see the comment that led to more than 100 other comments, 70 or so of which came before the suspect was apprehended. That comment thread is posted in this story on our website, chapelbrew.com. A few students questioned the speed in which Alert Carolina delivered the warning. Helfrich says all the founding members of Overheard at UNC graduated a while ago, but that the administrators after them have continued the tradition of an open portal for free-flowing, often fun conversation about anything that's happening on campus. Overheard has guidelines that have to be followed in order to remain a part of the group. No ads, promotions, plugs, or inappropriate or irrelevant posts may be posted, according to the group's About section. On Sunday, the administrators sent out a reminder that if anyone breaks those rules, the post and the member who posted it will be removed. And again, don't forget, Alert Carolina will be testing its text message system and its sirens sometime between 12 noon and 1 p.m. today. So if you're anywhere on the campus or around campus or anywhere near downtown, in fact, you will hear those sirens. Don't be alarmed. That is the UNC test. Overnight parking fees at UNC have been put on hold. The university's new Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration, Matt Fajak, sent out an email to faculty and staff last week stating the plan, which was scheduled to take effect August 15th, needed more time to work out any potential issues. That plan called for overnight parking passes as a necessity to park on campus and therefore an associated fee. Many people were outspoken about the change. Some people call safety into question, as it could cause the need for people to walk longer distances in the dark if they didn't have a pass. Because of the outpouring of concern, Fajak, in his email, said further study was needed to make sure the proper questions about alternative transportation, equity, and safety have all been asked. Anyone who's paid for the parking pass will be refunded the money. University employees were given the option to have the fees automatically deducted from their paychecks. Those automatic deductions will be canceled. The parking fees were part of a five-year transportation plan the UNC Board of Trustees implemented back in 2011. Fajak said he hopes everyone will participate in future discussions about the plan that will soon become available. Tuesday marked exactly a year from the day that Ellie Kinnaird announced she was resigning from the state Senate, a decision that set off not one but two appointment processes, along with a renewed controversy about the extensive use of appointments in Orange County. Looking back on last year's events with no regrets, Ellie Kinnaird stopped by the WCHL studios yesterday and had a conversation with Aaron Keck.
Your announcement last year at this time that that you were stepping down set into motion, again, a sequence of events that lasted a lot longer than I think anyone anticipated. Of course, there was the appointment process to replace you on the state Senate that led to Valerie Fouché's appointment. She was moving up from the state House. That led to another appointment process. This is why Greg Meyer serves in the state House now. Knowing what you know now, looking back on the way things transpired, do you have any regrets? Would you have done it the same way if you knew how it was going to play out?
Well, I was just thinking about that the other day because this anniversary does come up in my mind. Probably the same results could have been predicted. I think that probably Valerie would have chosen to run even if it were an election rather than an appointment. And I think probably Greg would have chosen to run for her position. So I don't think the outcome was any different. And this gave them a little bit of time in those respective chambers so that they can kind of get their sea legs in a new setting. And so I really don't think it would have been any different.
Are you surprised or pleasantly, unpleasantly, either way, with the way that Valerie Fouché has performed in the state Senate and Greg Meyer has performed in the state House?
Well, of course, I knew Valerie in the House, a very solid, responsible member of the House, and she's carried that on in the Senate. The thing is that there's not much a Democrat can do. And that's the sad part. And the really sad part is that at this upcoming election, there are 12 seats in the Senate where no Democrat is running and 43 in the House where no Democrat is running. And you could have gone to every Moral Monday and be mad as heck at what has done been done, and you would not have a candidate to vote for. And so I think that's the tragedy of all of this, is that instead of a vigorous recruiting and making sure that there was somebody in absolutely every district. Because if you look at the groups of people that were very angry, first of all, you got the unemployed right off the bat. Mm-hmm. You've got the health professionals because they didn't expand Medicaid. You've got women because of those issues. And heaven knows the teachers. And poor people who don't have a voice. But nevertheless, they could have voted for somebody. And I think that's the tragedy of all of this. But I think that those that we do have candidates for are solid, and I think we stand a good chance to take those seats back. So I think that Valerie will continue. She's, as I say, a very solid member of the Senate, and I know that she will continue to be, and I don't have any doubts about that.
Again, that is former State Senator Ellie Kinnaird of Chapel Hill speaking with Aaron Keck. Now, she hasn't exactly retired. She's been very active since she stepped down from that seat. Mostly in getting out the vote, but she's involved in a lot of political issues still. Visit our website, chapelbrew.com, to listen to that whole conversation. Today could be a very big day for proponents of gay marriage. Virginia officials are preparing for the possibility that gay marriages could soon be legal in the state of Virginia. The state registrar of vital records is drafting a revised marriage license form that will be used if the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals order ending Virginia's same-sex marriage ban goes into effect on Thursday morning. Attorneys representing a county clerk in Virginia have asked the United States Supreme Court to stay the appeals court's decision while it's appealed. Virginia is also supporting a delay to minimize disruptions while the issue is resolved. The Supreme Court has twice granted delays in related cases. Meanwhile, clergy supportive of gay marriage are making plans to be at courthouses all over the state on Thursday morning to perform marriages for same-sex couples. They say, a lot of people say, that if this happens in Virginia, North Carolina can't be far behind. WCHL News Time is 8:16. Time now for traffic and weather together. Traffic brought to you this morning by Crown Honda of South Point.
Ron, if I can make it through just 44 minutes time, I can make it without having the curse fall upon me. So I'm testing fate yet again, but traffic is still moving smoothly right now. Yeah. At about 6:45 this morning, I said everything looked really clear, and we're continuing with that trend so far right now. So that is good news. Mm-hmm. We'll keep an eye on it, and hope you keep an eye on the roads, as you always should. But if you see anything as you travel throughout the rest of the day, you can be a WCHL Road Warrior. Let us know of anything you see that needs to be reported. 919-967-8363 is the number to call, or you can tweet us at WCHL Chapelboro. As always, we ask you to do that safely.
Just wondering where you were going for a minute there, but now I understand. I know what was happening, but so far so good.
So far so good.
All right. Well,
yeah, to make a long story longer.
I like the sound of that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Crown Honda of South Point is a home of service where your scheduled service and maintenance happen while you sleep. Dream service from Crown Honda of South Point, located just a minute off 540 at the 751 exit. Crown Honda of South Point. WCHL's Chapel Hill Carborough weather brought to you this morning by Cruisers. Partly sunny today. We got 73 degrees right now. Scattered showers and thunderstorms possible in the afternoon. 30% chance of rain late in the day. Our high temperature today in the upper 80s. Tonight mostly clear, but still a chance of showers and or storms. Overnight low 70. Tomorrow we're looking at mostly sunny skies. Slight chance of rain in the afternoon, but the high tomorrow in the low 90s. My goodness. Tomorrow night, slight chance of rain with a low in the low 70s. We'll be in the low 90s again on Friday. So some warm weather definitely on the way. Cruisers Convenience Marketplace. We always talk about their coffee, but they serve the best tasting fountain drinks in town as well. Made with 100% filtered water, served at 34 degrees, and guaranteed to taste great. Cruisers, good to go.
Our name is WCHL. Our dial positions, 97.9 FM and 1360 AM. Our station website is chapelboro.com, where you can listen anywhere in the world with live streaming. This is Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station, WCHL.
WCHL News Time is 8:18. The public is invited to a meeting with North Carolina officials to comment on proposed rules for the oil and gas drilling method known as fracking. Today, the first of four public meetings is scheduled for the campus of North Carolina State University in Raleigh. It starts at 10 o'clock. The State Mining and Energy Commission plans to hold other meetings in Sanford, Reidsville, and Cullowhee. Back in June, Governor Pat McCrory signed a law clearing the way for permits to be issued for hydraulic fracturing or fracking as soon as the spring of 2015. This drilling method, of course, involves injecting mixtures of water, sand, gravel, and chemicals to break apart underground rocks to allow oil and gas to escape. The law lifts a 2012 moratorium that blocked permits. It's been criticized a lot by environmental groups. And other environmental news this morning, State House and Senate leaders say lawmakers have reached a compromise on legislation that would make Duke Energy curb pollution from its 33 coal ash dumps across the state. A statement from House Speaker Tom Tillis and Senate President Phil Berger said conferees reached an agreement yesterday that would give the state the strictest regulations in the nation. The statement said the legislation would make North Carolina the first to force the closure of all coal ash ponds. The statement said the bill sets a 15-year timetable for closing all unlined coal ash ponds and also eliminates the practice of wet ash disposal. The last version of the bill, publicly released last month, would have required Duke to remove the ash at four of its 14 coal-fired plants. Wait and see about the details on that story. It's 8:20 at WCHL. Time for championship sports. Countdown to Carolina football, 10 days. Carolina opens its season on August 30th in Keene Stadium against Liberty. And Carolina head football coach Larry Fedora knows time is running out on his preparations. With a sense of urgency and excitement building at the Navy Field practice facility, the Carolina coach is weighing in on a variety of topics concerning the state of the Tar Heels. WCHL's Matt Oakes has more.
With training camp wrapping up and the game plan for week one against Liberty being installed, Tar Heel observers may be wondering who impressed the most in the preseason grind. Coach Fedora says unheralded sophomore linebacker Joe Jackson would top that list.
Joe Jackson is really, if I had to pick out one guy out of the whole camp who has kind of turned himself around, I'd pick Joe Jackson or Sam Smiley, but it'd be one of those two, and Joe's right there.
While young talents like Jackson are hitting the field hard looking to impress the coaching staff for coveted playing time next week, veterans like Ethan Farmer are just hoping to be afforded the chance to suit it up at all in Keenan Stadium. Eligibility issues are a major concern for Farmer, and in turn, the defensive line. Coach Fedora says Farmer being one of a mere six seniors on the roster makes him even more invaluable on the field.
Oh, yeah, that's a concern. That's definitely a concern, and it's a concern for me if any of our guys aren't out on the field for whatever reason. But, yeah, especially when it's a senior and you only have six, you know, scholarship seniors, yeah, it's a concern. I got a lot of concerns.
Coach Fedora says there may be a silver lining in the Farmer situation. It gives younger Tar Heels a chance to step up, garner more reps, and in turn bolster the depth of the men up front.
I mean, that's something that we talked about as a staff, and we've got to get him enough to keep him going with whatever, you know, with what's, so he knows what's going on, which he's a senior. He has experience, so it's not critical that he gets all the reps. It's more critical that those younger guys that we're trying to create some depth there, that they're getting the reps, you know, because there's a chance they may be thrown in there right away, and they have to perform. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We can't wait on them. They just may have to go.
One of the most loaded positions heading into the fall appears to be at running back. With a healthy stable of speed burners and power backs at the UNC offense's disposal, Coach Fedora should be relishing the scoring possibilities in the backfield. But with so many options, who will receive the heaviest load of carries? Coach Fedora says for now, it's still a running back by committee effort.
You know, at this point, it's about getting all of them reps so that they're, you know, we want to keep them as healthy as possible, but also we want them to get valuable reps. I mean, reps that were they're learning something, not just going through the motions. So, you know, we're rolling. I think Larry's rolling them pretty good. I don't know. For me, I don't ever know who's in there. Don't really care right now. We want to make sure that we're efficient with what we do and we're moving the ball.
One of the pillars of the Coach Fedora regime at Carolina has always been special teams. Last season, return specialist Ryan Switzer basked in the national spotlight for his record-breaking performances. Although overshadowed by Switzer's electricity, punter Tommy Hibbard may prove just as vital to the fortunes of UNC in 2014. Coach Fedora, for one, continues to heap praise on the strong-legged senior from Charlotte.
Tommy's got a good leg, and he knows what we're trying to do, so he understands all of our schemes. You know, like today we were working pooch, and we had three live reps, and all three of them we put inside a 10-yard line. I mean, so he's really trying to make himself the best punter he can be. You know, he understands the situation. It's not just practice. I mean, it is, hey, this is critical. I mean, this is how we pin people. This is a big play for us. We're eating up chunks of yardage. We're gathering ground, you know, and he knows that, and I think he's taking it to heart. He's doing a really good job with it.
The countdown to Carolina game day sits at 10 days, and the storylines only continue to grow for the Tar Heels as promising upstarts like Jackson emerge, leaders like Farmer await future fates, and reliable special team athletes like Hibbard hone their crafts. Matt Oakes, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Again, countdown to Carolina football, 10 days. Opener is August 30th against Liberty in Keenan Stadium. You get complete coverage right here on WCHL. A quick note about the Carolina Panthers. Philadelphia Eagles have acquired running back Kenyon Barner from the Panthers for a conditional seventh-round draft pick in 2015. Last year, Barner was drafted in the sixth round by the Panthers. The 25-year-old Barner played in 8 regular season games and 1 playoff game with the Panthers. He was electrifying in college. He finished his collegiate career at Oregon ranked number 2 in school history in yards rushing with 3,623 and tied for second with 41 touchdowns rushing. As a senior in 2012, Barner earned first-team All-America honors by rushing for 1,767 yards, the second most in Oregon history, and 21 touchdowns, which was tied for most in school history. Chip Kelly is coach of the Eagles, and of course, he coached Kenyon Barner at Oregon. He says he will hopefully bring some depth to both our running back and return positions. He's obviously a guy I know really well from Oregon, where he had a very productive career. Barner has a lot of speed, explosiveness, and had a knack for making some really big plays. So if he makes those big plays in the NFL, he'll be doing it for the Eagles and not the Panthers. It's 8:25 at WCHL. Good morning.
Art Chansky Sports Notebook, exclusively on 97.9 FM WCHL.
There's a 9,000-pound nonprofit gorilla in every NCAA meeting room. This is Art Chansky with Wednesday Sports Notebook. Ever since college athletics became a big-time business, the tax-exempt status of universities, athletic departments, and foundations that raise money for athletic scholarships has been in question. Now that the athletes will begin getting paid, that notion has become absurd. The NCAA voted recently that the Power Five conferences can make their own rules, one of them being to tack the so-called cost of attendance onto an athletic scholarship. Schools will wind up paying athletes in all varsity sports somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000 each, above giving them the room, board, books, and tuition that a scholarship pays, clearly making them employees. At some schools, that will be upwards to $3 million more dollars added to the annual athletic expense line, and those that cannot come up with the extra jack to stay competitive will undoubtedly drop some varsity sports. The reasons colleges get nonprofit status is because of their educational mission. That becomes a total jock joke when some students are denied opportunities to participate, so the student athletes who bring in the most money get paid. In the other decision, the federal courts ruled in the O'Bannon case that the use of an athlete's image and likeness in any kind of for-profit business is now illegal without paying those athletes, past, present, and future. The ruling allows the NCAA to set those payment limits as long as it's at least $5,000 per athlete. This will cause big businesses like EA Sports to stop making college-based video games, but there are hundreds of other ways athletes' images are used. So the jig is up, as they say, about nonprofit status. The question now becomes, can universities keep their tax exemptions because of their educational mission while their athletic departments and fundraising arms begin paying Uncle Sam and the IRS big time on revenues generated from mega TV contracts? Schools can't keep paying multi-million dollar coaching salaries and building billion-dollar facilities once their tax status changes and they have to start paying taxes on what their athletic departments make. Ironically, losing their tax exemption will cause a 180-degree turn back in the direction of amateurism. It may take years of haggling in court, but the IRS will be the body that finally reins in college athletics. This is Art Chansky. See ya.
8:28 at WCHL, 73 degrees in Chapel Hill, and the excitement is building because Paul Cleaver's in the house. We're going to talk to him in just a few minutes here on WCHL.
It's the Honda Summer Clearance Event at Crown Honda South Point with the best savings of the summer. The best. Drive off in a new 2014 Honda Accord sedan, CVT LX, or with no money down.
No money down.
That's right. Zero due at signing, zero security deposit, zero first month payment.
Zero.
The time to buy is now during the Honda Summer Clearance Event at Crown Honda South Point.
Crown Honda.
Located on South Point Auto Park Boulevard and SouthPointHonda.com.
Subject to credit approval, excludes taxes, tax, and fees. Deal for details expires 9/2/14.
We asked several members of the Cedars of Chapel Hill what they like best about living there. One of these is Al LeBeau, Cedars member since 2012. Here's what Al had to say.
People wait too long before they go into a retirement community, and all of a sudden they find there's a big, long waiting list to get in. They want to move today, but they should have signed up years ago and gone in. So we tried to cut it off at the pass and go in early before we needed to be there. It's really first-class operation. I mean, the food is marvelous. When we have inclement weather, they will bring meals over to you, and it's just one of those services we find phenomenal. It seems like there's no end to what you can order. Like, if you want two scoops of ice cream, it isn't an extra charge. My wife and I are from the New York metropolitan area, and while we're in Cedars, we are so centrally located, it's just a hop and a skip to the airport. You got great hospitals within easy reach, and of course, there's always the sports activities that you have between, should I mention it, Duke and Chapel Hill.
Thanks, Al. To learn more about the Cedars lifestyle, visit cedarsofchapelhill.com.
Today is your last chance for a great offer at ourlocaldeal.com from Oasis at Carmel. It's 50% off, $20 worth of food and drink available now for only $10. Picture the perfect intimate and relaxed gathering spot. Oasis is the place. Located in downtown Carrboro inside Carmel Mall, it operates as a coffee house, tea room, wine bar, and cafe during the day. At night, the space is transformed into an environment of entertainment, connections, and inspiration. It's half off from Oasis at Carmel, and today's your last chance, so buy it now until midnight at ourlocaldeal.com.
73 degrees in Chapel Hill right now, 72 this morning in Carrboro, where it's always going to be cooler. A fairly nice day today. We do have a chance of rain late in the day, as usual this time of the year. 30% chance of a shower, maybe even a thunderstorm late in the day, but otherwise a lot of sunshine today. But for a high today of about 88. Tonight we're looking at mostly clear skies, still a chance of rain, but the low tonight about 70. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny, slight chance of rain in the afternoon, but the high in the low 90s. So really getting hot tomorrow. Tomorrow, Friday is going to be the same thing. High temperature in the low 90s.
If it's happening in our Chapel Hill Carrboro community, you will hear about it on 97.9 FM, WCHL, and you'll find it on our website, chapelboro.com.
CBS News Update, I'm Dave Barrett. Kidnapped in Syria a couple of years ago, American photojournalist James Foley. Now he's been executed, his decapitation shown on an ISIS video. Fellow photojournalist Nicole Tung had worked with Foley.
He knew that that risk was there. Just he wasn't going to be, I guess, cowed into not doing the work that he felt like he needed to do.
James Foley was 40, had worked in other tough places, including Libya and Iraq.
I'm Peter Mayer on Martha's Vineyard. As the White House considers a statement by President Obama on the killing, U.S. intelligence agencies are working to definitively confirm the death of James Foley. The National Security Council says if the video showing the execution is real, the U.S. is appalled by the brutal murder of an American journalist. The administration is urging social media sites to remove any images of the horrific killing.
Captors dressed in black, only their eyes visible in the video, threatened to kill another prisoner, one they say is also an American journalist. CBS News Update, I'm Dave Barrett.
This hour of the morning news is presented by Durham Tech, offering affordable and accessible quality education throughout Orange and Durham counties. Visit durhamtech.edu and click on Continue Education.
WCHL News, talk and Tar Heels at 97.9 FM, WCHL.
832 at WCHL, 73 degrees in Chapel Hill. This is Rod Stutz. Chapel Hill Carrboro school board members say the offer of free land to build a school at Obi Creek may actually cost more than meets the eye. At a school board meeting last week, Ben Perry of East West Partners offered the school district either 15 or 25 acres on the 120-acre Obi Creek site to build a new school across from Southern Village.
We have really no dog in this fight. I mean, we will support whatever y'all want to do with the council. We're not going to put up a fight. This is land that's going to generate no revenue for us either way.
However, to put that land to use, the school district would need to build a bridge, estimated to cost about $1 million. Steep slopes and environmentally sensitive areas also make developing that site difficult. East-West Partners is in the process of negotiating with the Chapel Hill Town Council on a development agreement that would govern the build-out of the Obi Creek project, and that's been going on for a long time. The 1.5 million square foot proposal has drawn fire from neighbors concerned about the size of the development and the traffic it might generate. School board chair Jamesetta Bedford told Perry she wants to wait until the negotiations with the town have advanced before further evaluating the offer of property.
I don't want to be a political pawn, and I don't want to get into it, and I don't want to upset my colleagues on the town council. I don't want to upset my neighbors. I don't want to upset the county commissioners.
The school board was much more eager to consider an offer of land across the street from Chapel Hill High School. The 9.3-acre site abuts land already owned by the district and would more than double the total acreage of that site. Executive Director of School Facilities for the city school system, Bill Mullen, said that location offers more flexibility for planning new schools.
It has a frontage on Homestead Road, which makes it very, very attractive. If we were considering an elementary school, high school addition, another district building, who knows?
The price of that parcel has not been disclosed, pending negotiation with the landowner in closed session. Today is a big day at Carolina. Alert Carolina isn't wasting any time testing its emergency messaging system at the start of the school year. This is only the second day of classes for UNC students. But is this the fastest way information is shared on the UNC campus? Alert Carolina will test its text message system and its sirens between 12 noon and 1 o'clock today. One way members of the Carolina campus sometimes get timely warning messages faster is through social media, specifically the Overheard at UNC group on Facebook.
We're not a professional alert system. We just have the benefit of social media with 15,000-plus subscribers, so any one person can really post an alert, and then the power of social media can verify whether that's a valid or invalid claim.
That is the voice of Ian Helfrick, one of the five administrators of the group and a recent UNC graduate. He says Overheard and Alert Carolina work best when information is shared hand in hand. And when that happens, Helfrick says the campus is very accepting of Alert Carolina.
That just provides a sense of security, you know, like the university is really looking out for its students, provides a professional alert system.
However, if messages on Overheard beat Alert Carolina, some frustrations have been made very clear on that campus Facebook group.
One of the people who was involved in the incident actually posted first, and that was just a couple minutes before Alert Carolina got out, and it is faster. The trade-off is it's not always the most accurate information, whereas Alert Carolina, you know, when they post something, when they send it out to the student body, it is the official university word on what's going on.
According to Helfrick, the limited staff of Alert Carolina compared to the nearly unlimited eyes, ears, and voices of the Carolina community play the leading role in that time difference. In that specific incident, a man reportedly pulled a knife on a student in the student union and then fled to Franklin Street. You can see the comment that touched off more than 100 other comments, 70 or so which came before the suspect got apprehended. That comment thread is posted in this story on our website, chapelboro.com. A few students questioned the speed in which Alert Carolina delivered the warning. Helfrick says all the founding members of Overheard graduated a while ago, but that the administrators after them have continued the tradition of an open portal for free-flowing, often fun conversation about anything that's happening on campus. Overheard has guidelines that have to be followed in order to remain a part of the group. No ads, promotions, plugs, or inappropriate or irrelevant posts may be posted, according to the group's About section. On Sunday, the administrator sent out a reminder that if anyone breaks those rules, the post and the member who posted it will be removed. Again, Alert Carolina is testing its text message system and those sirens between 12 noon and 1 p.m. today. So if you're anywhere around campus or downtown, you're going to hear those sirens. And don't be alarmed. It is the Alert Carolina system conducting a test. And more news from the university. Overnight parking fees at UNC have been put on hold. The university's new vice chancellor for finance and administration, Matt Fajak, sent out an email to faculty and staff last week stating that the plan, which was scheduled to take effect August 15th, needed more time to work out any potential issues. That plan called for overnight parking passes as a necessity to park on campus and therefore an associated fee. Many people have been outspoken about that change. Some people call safety into question, as it could cause the need for people to walk longer distances in the dark if they didn't have a pass. You've heard the stories here on WCHL. Because of the outpouring of concern, Fajak and his email said further study was needed to make sure the proper questions about alternative transportation, equity, and safety have all been asked. Anyone who's paid for the parking pass will be getting a refund, and university employees were given the option to have the fees automatically deducted from their paycheck. Those deductions will be canceled. Yesterday marked exactly a year from the day that Ellie Kinnaird announced she was resigning from the state Senate, a decision that set off not one but two appointment processes, along with a renewed controversy about the extensive use of appointments in Orange County. She stopped in yesterday and had a conversation with Aaron Keck. Looking back at the past year, she says she has no regrets. You can hear that whole conversation on our website at chapelboro.com. Organizers of regular protests at the North Carolina legislature are being joined by NAACP leaders in half dozen other states to launch a week of demonstrations. The North Carolina NAACP says that Friday will be the first of 7 days of demonstrations. Here in North Carolina, a coalition led by the NAACP has protested at the Capitol nearly every week during the past two legislative sessions. You've heard about and probably been involved with the Moral Monday protest in one way or another. NAACP leaders from Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Wisconsin said on a conference call yesterday they will hold demonstrations in their states during some or all of the 7 days. Organizers say demonstrations are also being planned in the state of Mississippi. And news around town this morning, the Southern Folklife Collection at UNC's Wilson Library is celebrating its 25th anniversary with a festival this Thursday through Saturday. The festival starts tomorrow night with a gala dinner and benefit concert at Wilson Library with Tip Merritt performing. On Friday evening, Carolina Performing Arts hosts the Rebirth Brass Band and Dumps to Funk. Then on Saturday, Cat's Cradle hosts an all-day affair, free and open to the public from 10 until 4. And then at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, Tip Merritt heads back onto the stage at Memorial Hall, joined by country music legend Merle Haggard. And you can head to 140 West Franklin Street tomorrow for another live outdoor concert. That evening's band will be Matt Phillips and the Philharmonic. The show runs from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. and it's free. For a complete schedule of events going on at 140 West downtown, head online to 140westfranklinplaza.com. You can read all these news around town stories and our news around town link on our website, chapelbro.com. It's 8:40 at WCHL. And good morning.
And now it's time for the professionals. Local service, daily insights.
Hi, my name is Stephen Lair, and I'm the franchise owner for Home Instead Senior Care in Chapel Hill. Home Instead Senior Care provides non-medical in-home care for seniors, companionship, meal preparation, medication reminders, on up through personal care and bathing assistance for seniors all throughout Orange and North Chatham County. Well, what I want to talk about today is what I call the white elephant. A lot of the clients we serve have lost their spouses, and we see a huge trend among families and caregivers that we call the white elephant. If you've ever been around someone who's lost a loved one, you've undoubtedly seen this situation played out. Immediately following the loss, everybody offers their heartfelt condolences. A few brave souls may actually offer to reminisce with you about the person you lost, but once the appropriate grieving period has passed, no one mentions their name again. Maybe they're afraid of upsetting their loved one. Maybe they're actually afraid of upsetting themselves. But in both instances, the memory of the departed kind of falls into this conversational abyss that no one dares to broach. And in my mind, the only thing greater than the tragedy of losing the person you love is losing them twice. Imagine if you could never say your wife's name again. For many caregivers and families, avoiding sensitive topics seems like the compassionate thing to do, but in doing it, you actually deny the person you care about not just the joy of reminiscing, but in some cases, you actually deny them an important part of the grieving process. What we do is we encourage our caregivers not to be afraid of the white elephant. Engage the seniors in their life on things that are most important to them. Ask them about their favorite memories. If you close the door on an entire chapter of their life and refuse to talk about it, you'll never really get to know them as a person. Ask them about their wedding day. Ask them about dancing under the stars at the officers' club. Ask them about the hard times, about their biggest mistakes. Ask them about the thing that they love the most. Along the way, you'll hear an unbelievable story, and it's a story that they desperately want to tell you. Well, for more information on this and everything that we do, you can go to homeinstead.com, or you can call us up at 919-933-3300.
This has been The Professionals on WCHL, local service, daily insights.
Perry locked himself out of his car. Should he A, call his amateur wrestler friend with fists of steel, or B, get roadside assistance from the Geico mobile app? The correct answer is B. The Geico mobile app uses GPS, so Perry can get roadside assistance quickly without saying a word. It's like telepathy. Perry's steel-fisted friend would dent up the door and break stuff. Geico's mobile app is speedy and makes it easy for Perry to get roadside assistance with the tap of his finger.
Geico. Wherever, whenever. Just a click away with our free mobile app.
At Cruiser's Convenience Marketplace Headquarters, we are thrilled with the overwhelming popularity of our 79-cent fountain drinks with chewy ice, but we need to clarify a few misconceptions. Cruiser serves our soft drinks at a tongue-tingling 34 degrees, but cannot be held liable for brain freezes. Our fountain drinks are made with 100% pure filtered water, but we make absolutely no Fountain of Youth claims. And although our Taste Great guarantee is a wonderful start, we cannot guarantee that the rest of your day will be perfect. That, my friend, is up to you. 79-cent fountain drinks, only at Cruiser's. Good to go.
Touchdown!
touchdown, Carolina!
It's a new beginning. Coach Larry Fedora's Tar Heels have high expectations for a new Carolina football season. It's year three and time to come together at Keenan Stadium. Opening game is Saturday, August 30th at 6 p.m. The opponent is Liberty. Let's get this season started and get our exclusive pregame coverage started with Countdown to Kickoff. Just like usual, 3 hours before game time. Carolina football on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL.
Go! Touchdown, Carolina!
I'm getting so excited. Countdown to Carolina football is only 10 days, and the season opener is Saturday, August 30th in Keenan Stadium, Carolina versus Liberty. That is not the most exciting thing that is happening today, however, because Paul Cleaver has just walked into the house. And Paul, of course, is the chief cook and bottle washer over at Charles House. And Paul, it's great to have you in here today.
Good morning, Ron. It's great to be with you, too.
You got a lot of good stuff happening at Charles House, and we're going to be doing a special live broadcast tomorrow afternoon from 4:30 until 6 with the brand new Charles House at Winmore. And first of all, before we talk about that, let's talk about the origins of Charles House. How did it all start?
Well, Charles House is going, we're in our 25th year. So over 25 years ago, the family of Charles Jones, who was the founder of the community church, mm-hmm. was taking care of Charlie and looking for a place where he could spend time during the day and the family could get respite. Not finding it and realizing that this community should have such a place, they set out to create it. And in the summer of 1990, Charles House opened to be just such a place.
Well, Charles House has gotten really well established during all that time since then, but when did you first get involved in Charles House?
It seems like a long time, but it's only been 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, you could have fooled me. I thought you'd been there longer than that. The Charles House now has a new facility that is going to be at Winmore, and it's an elder care home model, I guess mm-hmm. we'll call it.
Yeah.
Exactly what is that?
So the Charles House elder care home model is a new type of assisted living, essentially. We go into neighborhoods so that these homes that become home to six residents mm-hmm. and is staffed by what we call a household team, right. The caregivers in the home that take care of everything that happens in the home and as well as everything that the residents might need. These homes exist in neighborhoods. Our first one is in the Heritage Hills neighborhood. It opened in 2011 and is doing really well. Mm-hmm. It's home to six ladies who are part of the Heritage Hills neighborhood. So when Scott Covens and Peter Gaudette were receptive to thinking about an elder care home in their new neighborhood, Winmore, it was an exciting opportunity for us to look at expanding the model. And so here we are.
Who are the people who are going to live in this facility?
So in this facility, we're going to have two men and four women. Mm-hmm. So we're starting a co-ed house. The next one might be a frat house. We'll just wait and see what happens with that. And we five of the six places in Charles House Winmore have been spoken for by families who've made the decision mm-hmm. For their family members to live in Charles House Winmore.
That's really a fantastic idea, and glad you're doing it. I know that Winmore is a really attractive neighborhood, mm-hmm. a lot going for it because we spent some time out there mm-hmm. before, and it's going to be exciting to have Charles House out there. How do people learn more about Charles House itself and elder care homes mm-hmm. and about this whole subject in general?
Right. So the first place is our website, which is charleshouse.org. Very simple on the website. And there's information there. Our phone number is 919-967-7570 if anybody wants to call directly. And also, we're hosting an open house mm-hmm. Tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6:30 while we are in the throes of all the details for a state license from the Department of Health for the house to have an operating license. It's a great opportunity for the community to come out and see what an elder care home looks like before the people have moved in, and to see what this exciting model is for not just for Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and our community, but as a model for our state.
And WCHL will be there broadcasting live from 4:30 until 6 tomorrow at Charles House at 121 Della Street in the Winmore neighborhood. I'll be there along with Art Chansky, Anthony Wellman, the whole WCHL community crew will be there. And we will, of course, be talking to Paul Cleaver, who's going to be there as well. So, Paul, thanks for coming in this morning, giving us a little preview. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting news. We're glad to help spread that news, and we'll be seeing you tomorrow.
Great. Thanks, Ron.
Again, that website, if you want to find out more between now and then, is charleshouse.org.
That's it.
All right. That's good. 848 at WCHL. I'm Rod Stutz. D.G. Martin on the way, and also today's WCHL Hometown Hero.
What do you do with a bag of jewelry that you've inherited and you have no idea what's real, what's not, what's valuable, what's not valuable? This is Berkeley Grimble of Grimble Jewelers, and at least once a week we help someone with just this problem. So we have started a service we're calling Heirloom Solutions. At no charge, we will help you go through your old or inherited jewelry and determine what is valuable and advise you as to the best way to maximize the return if you choose to sell it. If you choose to redesign any gems into a piece more suitable to your taste, our master goldsmiths and designers can help you turn the old and boring into the new and exciting. And our graduate gemologists can do appraisals on pieces you want to keep. So if you have a bag or a safety deposit box full of jewelry, bring it in. You never know what you might have. It will cost you nothing and could benefit you greatly. One client thought his mom's jewelry was all costume and ended up with $150,000 because it was all, in fact, real. That's Heirloom Solutions offered by Grimble Jewelers.
This is Dr. Beth Goldstein with Central Dermatology Center. Rosacea is a common but misunderstood skin condition of flushing, blushing, and breakouts. If left untreated, the symptoms can worsen, and with time, people with rosacea may see a permanent redness in their face. If you've noticed signs of rosacea and are looking for help, request an appointment online with Central Dermatology Center at centralderm.net or call us at 919-401-1994. We accept most major insurances, including Medicare and TRICARE.
Weaver Street Realty has been in business on Main Street in Carrboro for 30 years and supports numerous local causes and nonprofits. Three of Weaver Street's agents, Gary Phillips, Jay Parker, and Don Basnight, are auctioneers and conduct charity auctions throughout the year. They call them at the Cornucopia House, Carrboro Art Center, the North Carolina Botanical Garden, Compass Center for Women and Families, Lerner Jewish Center, Ducks Unlimited, and the Chapel Hill Garden Club, among others. Don, Jay, and Gary of Weaver Street Realty care about our community.
Good morning. It is 8:51.
And now, WCHL presents the commentators.
This is Laura Wenzel. The United States has often led the world in creating a fair and open society. This was the first country to guarantee the right to free expression of our spiritual beliefs, for example. However, we also have a legacy of shamefully oppressing and neglecting our fellow human beings, beginning by massacring Native peoples and enslaving Africans, and more recently imprisoning Japanese American citizens and closing our ports to Jewish refugees escaping Nazis. Today, thousands of children in Guatemala and Honduras face rampant violence, including rape and being forced into gang membership. They are attempting to escape by making a dangerous journey to the United States. The response of our leaders has echoed the worst of our past. Governor McCrory stated that these children pose a threat to North Carolina and should be sent back, and our Congress went on vacation instead of finding a way to help these children. Groups like the North Carolina Justice Center and the North Carolina Religious Coalition for Justice for Immigrants are counteracting the racial hatred behind these responses and advocating for the well-being and protection of these children. We must not turn away these vulnerable people. We should have learned by now of the spiritual consequences of such an inhumane act. Please urge Governor McCrory and President Obama to provide compassionate relief for these refugees and save our country's spirit. This is Laura Wenzel.
Is there a local issue you care about? You're invited and encouraged to contribute your own views on this or any other issue. The Commentators, local people, local issues on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Thank you, superstar, disc jockey, morning talk show host. Been here forever, keeping us doing it right, Ron Stutz.
Now on WCHL, a page from D.G. Martin's notebook.
At a Durham Bulls game the other night, I was trying to identify a player who was wearing number 42, but the player list didn't show number 42. Then I noticed another player wearing number 42, and then another, and every player was wearing 42. Why? Well, I should have remembered last year's film, 42, about Jackie Robinson. And that number was on Robinson's uniform, When he first played for the Brooklyn Dodgers on April 15, 1947, he was the first African-American to break the color barrier in Major League Baseball. But before he moved into the Dodgers organization, Robinson played for the Kansas City Monarchs, a part of the Negro League. That was a term that covers several all-black professional leagues. The Bulls players were wearing number 42 as a part of that team's Negro League night, honoring all those who played for the all-black professional teams during the years of segregation. When the Bulls introduced about 20 local former Negro League players, including former Hillsborough Mayor Horace Johnson, all the fans, white and black, they gave a warm round of applause. Well, the Negro League provided the only option for talented black players until Robinson broke the Major League segregation policy. Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and a lot of others also began their careers in the Negro League. Well, bringing back black baseball players into the mainstream certainly had a positive impact on the struggle to dismantle segregation in other aspects of American life. Even hardline segregationist baseball players came to admire and cheer for Robinson, Mays, and Aaron. And with their appreciation for the black athletes as it increased, they must have had a harder time defending the hard laws and customs that kept people like those players from eating and going to school with other Americans. No, but not everything was positive. After Robinson's great success with the Dodgers, other major league teams began to raid all-black teams, and by the end of the 1960s, the Negro League had disappeared. Down on the Durham Bulls field, there were a lot of white baseball players wearing a black man's number 42, but most of the few players of color there were from the Dominican Republic. So I wondered if those Negro players, Negro League players, who were honored that night, I wonder whether they were thinking, it was nice when we still had our own league and our own teams. And I remember back in Charlotte, there was a great community pride 30 years ago or so about the successful desegregation of their schools. In one of the previous all-black high schools, West Charlotte, had gained a large percentage of white students and seemed to be doing great. I thought this was something for everyone to brag about, until an older woman at a public meeting in the West Charlotte neighborhood stood up and said, "Everything was just fine around here until they came along and took our school away from us." As I watched the former Negro League players walk out onto the field the other night, I wondered if some of them did not feel the same way about their leagues and their teams. This is D.G. Barton.
Thank you, G.G. Really makes you think, doesn't it? It's 8:56 at WCHL. You remember Wayne Pond's word of the day? What is the word? How do you spell it? What does it mean? Call me right now, 919-929-WCHL. If you know the answers to those questions, I'll give you a $10 gift card to Cruisers if you're the first to get in. And it's brought to you by Franklin Street Realty. Your number to call right now, 919-929-WCHL.
This is Gerald Ramoyne, General Manager, Performance Auto Mall in Chapel Hill. We're proud of the performance promise, and we're proud of our community, too. That's why Performance Auto Mall highlights a great community service demonstrated by today's Village Pride Award honoree.
Ella Spencer is today's WCHL hometown hero. She's deputy clerk of court for Orange County. Here's Assistant District Attorney Jeff Neiman.
Everybody in the courthouse would say that the great thing about Ella is if you need help with something, she's going to help you with it. And she's not going to throw up her hands and say, "That's not my job," or anything like that. That's not the way she operates. She's the one who steps up and does it. The reason that I believe she's deserving of the hometown hero is that she does it in such a quiet, unassuming way. You know, the rest of the people in the courthouse, lawyers and judges and law enforcement officers, typically when they do things well, it almost by definition gets attention. The thing about her job is, when she is doing her job well, which is all the time, it goes almost completely unnoticed. She day-to-day is helping move the justice system forward in a way that is just seamless and helpful at every turn, and she's just one of those people that, an unsung hero of the courthouse.
And what kind of a person is Ella Spencer?
Very pleasant, very friendly and nice, but mainly what she does is she just does her job and doesn't really expect or ask for any kind of attention or fanfare for it. She just does her job really well every day.
Well, it sounds like Ella Spencer makes everybody else's life a lot better and a lot easier without calling attention to herself. And in some ways, that's the definition of a WCHL hometown hero.
Absolutely, that's the case. And there are certain things like, you know, we will forget to get a certain type of paperwork done or not get something done exactly the way it's supposed to be done. And don't get me wrong, her job as clerk is to make sure it's done correctly. But when we need help with that kind of thing, she helps get it done in a way that minimizes the burden on the rest of us. She helps make sure that it gets done correctly, but in a way that helps move it forward as opposed to slowing things down.
And Ella Spencer is the absolute best at what she does.
Her hard work and helpfulness to attention ratio is higher than anybody else I know. Because the role is kind of a quiet role, it's the kind of thing that doesn't get attention very much, and she deserves it because she's doing so much quietly to help make the process work. I mean, I've worked in the courts for 8 years now, and there are a lot of people who do great things. She really just struck me as someone who just that pure, unassuming, does her job, helps the rest of us do our job better, and doesn't really ask for any kind of attention for it. And I'd like for her to get this kind of recognition. I think she deserves it.
Our thanks to the assistant DA, Jeff Neiman, for the recommendation, and congratulations, Ella Spencer, Deputy Clerk of Court for Orange County. Today's WCHL Hometown Hero.
Performance Auto Mall is proud to put today's Village Pride Award honoree in our spotlight. And remember, at Performance Auto Mall in Chapel Hill, we carry Acura, BMW, Chevrolet, Porsche, and Subaru. But we also have access to nearly 4,000 pre-owned automobiles. At Performance Auto Mall, we can find your next automobile, no matter the brand. We promise.
This hour of the morning news is presented by Durham Tech Community College. Want a head start on college or career skills? A great opportunity awaits you at Durham Tech. Online at durhamtech.edu.
It's 9 o'clock.
This is 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
Shifted into yet another street battle as protesters began launching bottles in the direction of officers.
The criminals embedded themselves and hid behind media. They threw urine on officers, and that's what caused officers to take action and begin to make arrests.
Those responsible were removed one by one. Police used pepper spray to scatter the crowd, but no rubber bullets were fired.
Later today, a local grand jury is expected to hear evidence in the shooting death of Michael Brown, and his family has scheduled his funeral for Monday.
Attorney General Eric Holder goes to Ferguson today. White House correspondent Peter Mayer.
The nation's top law enforcement official will confer with FBI agents on the federal investigation. Holder will also meet with local officials and community leaders who've been involved in efforts to restore peace in the troubled St. Louis suburb. Officials say Holder will tell everyone involved in all levels of the inquiry to avoid prejudging a case that is under investigation.
In Harvey, Illinois, a standoff between two gunmen and police is into its 19th hour. WBBM's Bob Roberts.
The gunmen were would-be thieves who apparently had no idea anyone was home initially, but quickly took 8 hostages. They fired on arriving police officers, grazing one and breaking the arm of another. Now SWAT officers from 26 departments are on the scene. Negotiations have been conducted through an open window, not by phone.
There are still 2 children and 2 adults inside. The family of American journalist James Foley says he is the man shown being beheaded in a video posted by Islamic State militants. Sky News reporter Nick Martin.
What the message towards the end of the video simply said was that if you continue with U.S. airstrikes, then we will continue to spill American blood. And the fear is now that Stephen Sotloff, who is a reporter for Time magazine, who's also featured in that video, there are huge worries for his welfare. Because the threat at the end says that if airstrikes continue, he will be next.
Air travelers may be getting overcharged thanks to higher security fees. CBS's Gary Nunn is here live.